Hi guys, welcome to another episode of the Throughball Podcast. Me and my friends are already here, so let's say hi. Hey Neeraj, how are you doing?
Hi dude.
How's it in France?
It's okay.
Okay, yeah, so we have a Liverpool supporter here. Hi Amit, what's up?
Yeah man, I'm good. Pretty good weather here in Bangalore, so yeah, been lazy all day.
that's good. Speaking about Liverpool, we have another supporter. Hi Shiva, what's up?
Yeah, I'm fine also.
Right, we have a Barcelona supporter here. Hi Naval.
Hello.
So we'll go directly into the topics. We'll start with the Liverpool versus Tottenham match, which was a thriller and in at 2-2. I'll start with Amit. So Amit, what did you make of the match?
A pretty competitive game. Obviously, being a Liverpool fan, I was a bit gutted because we took the lead twice and we conceded two late goals. But yeah, it had a lot of action, not just in terms of the football, but also in terms of refereeing decisions, because there were two penalties, obviously, and both of them were contentious, especially the first one, because it created a lot of confusion exactly the offside rule is and how it is interpreted in England. Barring that, I think it was essentially a game of two halves where Liverpool, with their usual press, stifled Spurs and scored the opening goal. Spurs changed their setup a bit in the second half. It seemed a bit something sort of a diamond with a lot of the play happening through the middle. Liverpool, as usual, defensively were a bit frail, because despite, I think, Joel Matip went on in the second half. So, despite playing with three centre-halves, I think we conceded the goal. So, yeah, a lot of talking points again. Lloris Karius had a mixed game, made a few good saves, but again was culpable for the opening goal, even though it was one hell of a strike by Victor Wanyama. But yeah, all in all, a decent exhibition of the Premier League.
But I sort of agree with the point. It was controversial. It was very end-to-end. So, proper depiction of the Premier League. So, we'll talk about the controversial decisions, But Shiva, to you, how good is Mohamed Salah turning out to be as a signing?
It is a sad thing that we aren't talking about his goals after the night. And it was all the penalty and Moss and Atkinson saga. But really, I couldn't believe, I still can't believe that he's scoring in this rate. Actually, when he's joined, I also said earlier that I was a bit skeptical how he will actually turn up in Liverpool. But I think he's, right now, he's actually suited perfectly for Klopp's system, and he's, with advancement of time, he's actually becoming more and more mature. I'm actually really enjoying his game right now. Finding spaces, dribbling past two to three different defenders for fun. I mean, whatever you can actually expect from a world-class player, Salah is actually providing to Liverpool right now.
Can't deny that. So, Neeraj, talking about the controversial decisions. So, the first penalty that Spurs got, like people are saying, the Kane dive. But before that also, there was offside decision, which was not given. Personally, seeing the match, I thought it was offside, because I think according to the rules, what states was that the opposition player has to make a back pass not to be offside. What did you make of it?
Oh, I think the first one is definitely offside, because you see Lovren looking at Kane. You can see Lovren has that peripheral vision of Kane in his behind him. And Lovren tries to clear it. If Kane wasn't there, he probably would have waited and maybe passed it back or passed it to his side. So I think it is down to interpretation, and but I think that was a harsh call. And even as far as the penalty is concerned, I think any striker would go down there. It's one of those things, if your team gets the advantage from that sort of dive, you're fine with it, but if it happens against you, you don't like it. It falls in that gray area.
But are you saying it was a dive?
I don't it's not black and white. Like it's not a dive. It's not a dive. I think it's like he just left his leg in there to he waited for Karius to make contact. It was like he manufactured the contact, like Kane. So I think it was, I don't know, I think a lot of, like, even, like, Rooney said on Monday Night Football, like, even he would have done the same. And even Deulofeu did the same against Courtois. So,
the rule basically says that, you know, if you're obstructing someone from playing, then, yeah, obviously you're, like, trying to stop him from playing and it's a foul. But it's gone to a point where, obviously, football is a contact sport. But it's gone to a point where each and every contact is trying to be, you know, made into a foul by opposition strikers, which I'm sure even Liverpool players have done. So we can't really complain. It's basically just how the way the game is being played right now.
Yes, that's what even I wanted to say. It's like, just imagine that maybe Firmino did that, like, and not Kane. Like, and Spurs fans will be reacting the way Liverpool fans are right now. And they won't defend Firmino, saying, it's like, there was contact, it's a penalty and all that. I just think it falls in that grey area between, like, is it a dive or not? But I don't think, like, that affected that much. I think the second one was, like, the one which affected the game, because that was scored. The second one was definitely offside, as we can see, but... I think, like, with video assistant referee, that wouldn't have been a penalty. But with real-time view, I don't think, like, you can blame the linesman for that. Because it's, like, it's a split second and it's, like, what, one leg outside, like, offside. So, I don't think that, the referee could have, like, any referee could have spotted that. And even the second penalty was kind of soft. Because Lamela just, like, he went down as if someone shot him in the head. You know, it's just the way it goes. I don't think, like, Liverpool fans, like, should have any concerns about their defense anyway. Because it was, like, both the goals, like, the first goal was, like, a freak incident. Like, Wanyama just shooting from 28 yards. And the second one, I don't know, it's like, it's a penalty on one day, it's not a penalty on another day. So, I will just leave it at that, I guess. But I can understand the frustration.
I think alongside with Manchester and Chelsea, Spurs has the third best defense in league. These three teams are the best three teams with the defense. And I think you can't actually score 3-4 for fun every day. So I think we were actually doing pretty good. And for the first time, I was feeling that Liverpool defense is soaking the pressure quite well. But then those two goals happened and all and all, it was a 2-2 draw.
I think the problem was at one point, like in the maybe around 60th minute or something, we were trying to play. But, you know, beyond that time, our defense just kept falling deeper and deeper. So
yeah, and there was practically no midfield. The midfield was totally being second best.
I think that the Liverpool players didn't come up with the same intensity in the second half as they did in the first.
Mm-hmm.
In the first half,
even though Spurs had the majority of the ball, Liverpool had like the best attacking like positions. Like most of the good half chances fell to Liverpool. I think only the one chance to Son was the one for Spurs in the first half. But in the second half, Liverpool just kept inviting pressure.
I think missed a trick by bringing on Chamberlain a bit late because of all the players that we had on the bench, you know, he's that one player who can provide that drive from midfield. So I think we brought him on after the equalizer, which was pretty late, or maybe like around the 75th minute or something. Definitely should have come on earlier because, you know, would have stopped our defense from falling a bit deep.
Yeah, but isn't this like a regular criticism of Klopp that he messes up his substitutions. He leaves it too late.
When it became
2-1 and Liverpool, when it was 1-1, when Wanyama scored, then Liverpool tried to start pushing up because they wanted to win the game, obviously. But Spurs soaked up the pressure pretty well until Salah, that was individual brilliance, so you can't do anything about it. But Liverpool couldn't do the same for 2 minutes. Even though the penalty was dodgy and everything, but they invited pressure. They just camped inside the penalty box. It was all just messy for me. I don't know. I think that the Liverpool players are having the heads key. We'll get criticism and all that. We have to do it. They're nervous for some reason. And even the Van Dijk kick, you look at his leg and he's trying to pull it away, but the momentum takes it. So it's like you feel sorry for him because he had a really good game. I think that was Kane's worst game in a long time for him.
Yeah, Lovren had a pretty decent game apart from that.
Even Lovren.
He should have done better.
Even Lovren did well.
That pretty much defines Lovren, right? He would be having a very good game and suddenly he will make an error. Kane was offside, but he shouldn't have missed the ball there. You can argue like that.
One thing I think that Lovren could have probably just left the ball, because Kane was offside anyway.
He was trying to scoop the ball or something like that.
He just wanted to smash the heavens out of it. I don't know why.
I don't know why, but I just thought after the game that he could have just left it and Kane would have been offside.
I think that's one of our defender's instincts, that the ball is coming and he wanted to clear it out. I don't blame him for that entirely, but what I'm saying is that top level defender, he shouldn't have missed the ball. That was not a very difficult ball to clear as such.
Yeah, but you that took a deflection. If you see it from a reverse angle, when Dele Alli plays it, I think it was Wijnaldum or Oxlade-Chamberlain. It took a slight deflection and came towards Lovren. So you can't guess the backspin and everything after a deflection. But even then, he could have left it or tried to control it, but he just it was a very wild swing at the ball. And it just went towards Kane and, But at the end of the day, that didn't affect the game. I think the second one was also it was a dodgy penalty. It's you get it once, you don't get it the other time. And also, the referee actually missed it, right?
I think despite the linesman's, what the linesman said, that if Lovren didn't touch it, then, because that's what he was heard saying. If he doesn't touch it, then it's offside. John Moss basically replied saying he doesn't know, and despite that, he went ahead and gave the penalty anyway. So, they are very dodgy. Hopefully,
that's very interesting because, both the penalties had very contradictory things going around. The first penalty, John Moss didn't listen to the linesman. The second penalty, he did not give a penalty and then he came back because the linesman had called for a penalty. So, a lot of things were going on. Why he did those things is very, big mystery.
Until that point in the game, John Moss had a very good game. There was no controversy as such until then, and suddenly he messed up the big calls.
I think that happens in a big match.
He just handled it very badly. If he had given the penalty, he could have just stuck to it. But instead, he went over and I don't know what he was trying to discuss after he gave the penalty. Especially when the linesman himself is saying that is offside if the player didn't touch it. And he can be seen saying, I don't know if he did. It was really poorly handled by him.
But a good result for Spurs though, because they have a couple of tough games.
I think it won't matter for them to them if they lose the North London Derby. Like, if you ask the Spurs fan before the United game if they were happy with 4 points out of these three games, they'll be happy with that.
Yeah.
Obviously. Because it's like three top four competitors and they get 4 points out of that. And
So moving on from the Liverpool Spurs game, I mean, it was a fantastic game and very controversial, very exciting. We go on to Chelsea. The second loss for Chelsea by a 3-goal margin, second consecutive loss to a team outside top six. So I'll go to Naval this time. So Naval, what do you make of it?
To be honest, looking at the game, it was all fine till the 86th minute and till when Hazard equalized. And after that, what followed was what Chelsea shouldn't have been doing. And it was defensively very poor. And it all happened in a very hast, or it happened so fast that Watford even scored four. And that was the end of it. And that has been Chelsea quiet in the recent. They have a good squad, actually. But then the injuries to the players and the teams and the team selection and everything is not going well for Conte this time. And I guess even in the presser, Conte admitted that he had got the lineup wrong. And I feel, I still feel that they should have started with a striker or something. Like, I feel Giroud should have started. And the moment he came on, I think Chelsea did quite a bit good that moment. But I think Giroud was even injured previously, and maybe Chelsea were trying to ease him into the game. But then could have made a difference if Chelsea had started from the striker. And regarding Watford played really well. And they were looking, they were the better team in all the phases, and especially a good performance from Gerard Deulofeu, especially as a Barca fan. And it was overall a very good performance from Watford, all credits to them. And I feel it's more regarding injuries, and maybe Chelsea should get back on the track. And it's just a bad phase for Chelsea at the moment. I feel they should do good, and I strongly feel that Bakayoko should be given a drop, I feel, because time and again, Conte has been giving him chances, but then he's not impressive at all, and especially getting sent off at the 30th minute with a whole 1 hour to play. And that was very difficult for Chelsea. And they have central midfielders, they have Drinkwater, they can use Fabregas, they have many options. So I don't feel Chelsea should be lacking. And that's it for the good performance from Watford overall.
Bakayoko had a terrible game, man. I mean, I was like going through some of his, basically going through some of Monaco's formations, and they essentially played like sort of like a 4-4-2 with Bakayoko and Fabinho sitting in the midfield, but which is similar to what Chelsea are playing, right? Because I think Kante is playing alongside him more often than not.
Yes.
So he looked so off the pace, dude. I was surprised, because it's not like the League One is one where there's a lack of intensity or something. So kind of like surprised with his first season at Chelsea, because
in this particular game, like the 29 odd minutes that he played, he was like terrible. I mean, one of the worst performances I've seen in a long time by a player. Like, in the 20 minutes, he gave away the ball some 4 or 5 times. So I mean, that's pretty unacceptable for a top level player.
But exactly. Like, and what I made out of this game, like in terms of compared to last season, was you guys basically had Nemanja Matic and Diego Costa, who Matic got the job done in midfield alongside Kante, and Costa, you know, despite the whole team having sort of 6 out of 10 games, Costa was your player who'd just go on and score that one elusive goal that would win you the game. This season, that those two key elements have like totally been lifted. So
I agree with Costa very much. I mean, to replace Costa is a very difficult task. I mean, Morata is a good player in my opinion, and he has the potential, but I don't think he can replace Costa as of now. I mean, it's been a downgrade to Costa. Shiva, coming to you, I mean, you have seen Antonio Conte managing Juventus and Italy also, he is known for his defensive, setting up his team well defensively. So, like, Chelsea has been good defensively over the season. I mean, they are, I think, third best defense in the... But conceding, you know, 7 goals in 2 matches, that's very unlike him, right?
Yeah, obviously. I think Conte has done it previously also, even in the last season after beating Arsenal. But yeah, the circumstances are a bit different. But I think Chelsea will bounce back eventually. Conte will set things straight. And as Naval has already mentioned, Bakayoko, I think, needs to be dropped and replaced by someone else. And probably giving him time, giving him 10 or 20 minutes in every game, he can actually build him. But at this moment, I think they actually needs to drop. He actually needs to drop him. And I think Conte's man, I think the atmosphere at Chelsea is also also being spoiled a bit, because Conte also keeps on, I think, blaming the board and the manager. Sometimes it feels like he doesn't belong to Chelsea. He is actually saying the club may know what is happening with Hazard and Courtois' contract and other stuffs like that. So actually that's also, I think, affecting the players or the dressing room atmosphere to some extent. But I think Conte can pull things up. Media and other journalists are reporting as if there is a huge crisis and they are probably in 16th or 17th, like 2 years ago. But they are still fourth and they have big UCL match coming up. And I think Conte can set things straight.
Right, right. We are all hoping for that. I mean, Chelsea fans are hoping for that.
Yeah.
Neeraj, coming to you. Chelsea have a big match coming up against Barcelona. Like, Chelsea are still in the FA Cup. Chelsea are still fourth and they can stay that. I mean, there's not much difference between Chelsea and Liverpool. There's only a 1-point difference between the third and fourth. But though even the fifth place team, Tottenham, are 1 point behind, as we discussed. What do you think? I mean, do you think Conte will stay?
No, I think Conte needs some assurances from the board. Like, even if he stays until the season's done, I think unless he gets some sort of assurances that he'll get world-class players, because even though Chelsea spent a lot of money this season, but they haven't spent it on true quality, you know, they were being stingy. You see, even with the Lukaku one, they started out at 60 million and they were just not willing to pay the agent fees and all that. While United and City are going and getting it done, you know, I think willing to pay whatever he wanted. Sanchez would have gone to Chelsea. I have no doubt about that, because Sanchez is he's not coming to United because George Best or something. He players want money. So I think Chelsea have to rethink their strategy. But that puts us in this weird place, because Chelsea also have the stadium redevelopment stuff to go, to happen. So I think unless he gets any assurances.
I think that's fairly assessed by all of us here. According to me, I think the board should give a chance to for Conte to stay, you know, whatever the results. The first season that he managed, really, before that, Chelsea had finished 10th, but he did the job. And I still think he can do the job. But I think some players are needed at this moment, and I hope that will be. So, moving on, we'll go to Arsenal and their new signing. So, Arsenal defeated Everton 5-1, which is a pretty impressive result. Aaron Ramsey scoring the hat-trick. Neeraj, did you see the match?
Yeah, I saw the match.
So, what do you make of your ex-player Mkhitaryan over there?
Yeah, it's a new environment. And he, if you remember, he started the season the same way. He got 5 assists in the first 3 games for United this season also. Right. But after that, these are his, 3 assists after the first 3 games. So, you see... he's a very temperamental player. He isn't that kind of a player who's gonna push the team when the team is down. He has quality. We all know that. We've seen that at Dortmund. But I think we can only like make a judgment after maybe a month or two. But right now, it's looking like a good signing because obviously he got three assists.
Yeah, so Mkhitaryan looking good. I mean, three assists is a good thing. Does it also have to do with, you know, the movement and, you know, of Aubameyang and Ozil around him?
I think, yeah, as Neeraj said, Mkhitaryan is one player who plays well only if the team plays well. Which and now he's gone to a team where, in fact, all the players play well if the team plays well. So
that's an interesting point.
So yeah, if Arsenal play, as you know, this sort of proactive football with you know, a lot of players pushing forward, then Mkhitaryan will, yeah, eventually like end up with more goals and assists than he did at United. But I'm not sure that's going to happen this season because they just don't have, you know, that midfield where they can keep functioning by going forward because it's Granit Xhaka and Jack Wilshere over there. And Jack Wilshere isn't a player, you know, who, although now he started playing a lot more, but, you know, he's essentially that key cog that connects the defense to midfield. So unless they function collectively as a unit, I don't think Mkhitaryan is going to prosper over there. But yeah, overall, speaking about the game, we're, you know, we're praising Arsenal a lot, but we're probably forgetting Everton were abject. Sam Allardyce basically has given up on the season. He said, this was a game like we can forget about. Essentially, I'm thinking he was implying it for the whole season because they don't have much to play for. The way they just came out and, you know, I don't know what they were trying because usually a Sam Allardyce side is well-drilled at the back and we didn't see that at all. You know, players' first touches were bad. They didn't know whom to mark. There was a lot of space in between. So, yeah, credit to Arsenal, but Everton were terrible.
Yeah, which I agree. That's a point I agree with. I mean, before the season, there was a lot of hype around Everton, you know, that they had signed a lot of players, spent a lot of money. But I don't think, I mean, they never got going this season. Like, they sacked their manager. They got Sam Allardyce, who is, like, known as more of a, you know, relegation specialist. He guides team off relegation zone. I mean, for Everton, and, like, especially the money they spent, that's really sad. Like moving on from here, like one more topic which I would like to touch down upon is the Riyad Mahrez issue. So the he has been missing training I think for 3 weeks now and has been fined also. Like, what do you guys make of this? Like, I mean, for me, I personally, I think it's very unprofessional. I mean, yes, he had played very professionally. He wanted to go in the summer. Leicester blocked that. He patiently waited for his chance in the winter. He tried to make his move, but I think what Leicester was thinking that they lose Mahrez, they cannot replace him this season. So I think they want to hold on to the summer. So, like, what do you guys make out of it?
The funniest story, you know, I've heard out of this whole episode is apparently Riyad Mahrez waited in the airport for about, I don't know, half a day. He was waiting for the representatives to appear, but they never came.
At the airport?
Yeah, he actually waited at the airport. For the, I think it was Man City. Yeah, he waited for the Man City representatives, but no one showed up. So, yeah, he has reason to be pissed. But I think he'll eventually play because we've seen a lot of players doing all this. But, you know, obviously they have to play because that's what they do there. That's what they're paid to do. But, yeah, it's been two transfer windows now. So you can say why, you know, he's pissed because Felipe Coutinho had a similar issue where, although they framed saying he had a bad back, we all know what actually happened. I'd probably see him moving to City in the summer, though.
For me, I think City came in for him because of the Sané injury. Personally, I don't think he will move to City in the summer because I personally don't see that, you know, City requiring him too much. I think United and Chelsea will be in for him. Yeah. I also can't see Liverpool being in for him because I think Liverpool want a left-sided, you know, player rather than a right-sided player that Mahrez is. But I mean, you never know. With the class that Mahrez is and, you know, the EPL experience he provides, many teams can be in for him.
United is a good shout because United are in need of a right winger. And that's probably what, that's essentially Mahrez's best position. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yep. Another topic which I would like to touch upon is that, you know, the Swansea manager, Carlos Calvar. I mean, Swansea were supposedly out and down, you know, like people had actually like said that Swansea are getting relegated for sure. I think some might put money also, I don't know. This guy has come and just turned around their fortunes in a very short time. They are out of the top, I mean, bottom three. Albeit they are in at the same point, you know, with the 18th and 19th position teams, which is Stoke City and Huddersfield. But, they have won against Liverpool and their matches against Liverpool and Arsenal, which is a huge deal, right, Neeraj?
Yeah, I think he has done pretty well. I don't think they've lost under him yet. Or maybe they just lost one game. But in the past 2 months, their form has been really good in the league. I think the victories against Liverpool and Arsenal are just the cherries on the cake.
He's been nominated for Manager of the Month, I think.
Yeah, I think he's going to win it because
he got
an arbitration
in January, right?
Yeah, for January.
Also, many players like Dyer and Tammy Abraham are looking really good under him. And that's quite commendable.
But the thing is, it could all change pretty soon because Wilfred Bony and forgetting the other chap's name.
Yeah, for
Dutch. Both of them have been ruled out for the rest of the season, so. And they are like their first team players. That's going to be a big blow.
So yes, the bottom of the half of the EPL table looks amazing. I mean, between the 11th place team and the 17th place team, which is Watford is 11th and Swansea is 17th, there's only a 7-point difference. I mean, like, that's pretty. And like the 17th, 18th and 19th teams are tied at 24 points each. I mean, that's like very close.
Yeah, if 2-3 games goes another way, then there can be huge changes in the position.
That's more of a race than the first position this season.
I actually saw another statistic. It's like Watford are 6 points away from a Europa League place and 6 points away from relegation.
Relegation, yes.
So it's like, yes, I think this season has really like put the top six in another stratosphere, and the rest of the league is way behind. I think there's probably 10 or 12 points gap between Arsenal and the
Burnley. Yeah, 9-point gap. Yes.
Yeah. So you can just see, because Arsenal themselves have been having a really bad season this time. And you see the rest of the league struggling like this. And Everton are a club who spent more than United this season. And still they're battling. They're probably still in the relegation fight. Like, if they lose two more games, they could probably be in the relegation.
Yeah, they can scramble in there.
Yeah. So, I think this season has really, changed the whole dynamic of the English, of the Premier League. And I think this gap will only get wider because all the top six clubs have really good world-class managers, and they're getting the backing from their teams. Okay, apart from Conte. But so, yeah. But still, like, you can see the difference. Like, even though Conte hasn't gotten the proper backing from his board, but they're still in fourth position. Like, they were third a week ago.
I think, so I remember once, I think 2 or 3 podcasts back, a lot of us billed them to finish second.
Yeah. Yeah, even I wasn't confident in United. Because, yes, I don't know, is it, the past 4 years have just like scarred me, I guess. But I still go, whenever I see, like, this weekend, Newcastle away, and I'm thinking we are definitely dropping points here. Apart from City, I think no other top six club can say that also. Like, we can go there and get the 3 points.
To be honest.
But yeah, going back to what Gaurav said, the bottom half, I think barring West Brom, because they have Alan Pardew, and Alan Pardew isn't, you know, that sort of a manager who can change things at a club, because wherever he's gone, I think he basically has this record of losing 7 successive games at 3 different clubs, which is West Ham, Palace, and
Newcastle.
I think Newcastle, yeah. And Palace, yeah. So
yeah.
He isn't a manager, you know, when he comes in, yeah, there's a massive impact, but over a period of time, yeah, it just starts going downhill. And the thing with West Brom is they've sort of started that way this season. So I really can't see them, you know, unless they somehow manage to sack Pardew and bring someone else in time. I don't see them keeping their Premier League status this season.
Oh, yeah. I think True Jordy will have the correct words to say about Alan Pardew. He'll just say he's a wanker.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people seem not to like Alan Pardew because of that. He's very outspoken, and you know, all the antics that he does, I mean, not very managerial. Like,
yeah, like, I still remember his dance after Palace scored.
Oh, that was awful.
It's like, he's playing a top club, and there's still time to for them to score, and he's like dancing there. And like, I think they even showed the replay of him dancing after United scored. Oh. So like, you know, it was so bad for him. Yeah, but he's not like Tony Pulis or like Big Sam, because like they are the ones who actually like turn a situation around, even though like all of them play shit football. But Tony Pulis and Big Sam look like they know what they're doing. Like, they know how to get a reaction from their players. But Pardew doesn't seem to know like what to do after a situation gets to a point where it's rock bottom.
I think, which is a fair assessment. I mean, the guy has managed quite a few clubs. I think he did very well with Newcastle. I think were 5th under him for one season. That one particular season where Pape Cisse and Dembaba really clicked. So, but yeah, apart from the white, I think he has a very mediocre thing. So we'll go on to the new signings which happened over that winter transfer. I mean, we already talked about Mkhitaryan. We'll talk about Amit's favorite striker here. Amit, beautiful finish by Mr. Aubameyang.
Yeah, pretty good finish, but he missed an easier one before that, so...
It was offside.
Yeah, the goal was offside as well, so fuck off. Yeah. Score easy goals and then we'll be like, give you credit.
Yeah.
But yeah,
yeah, he actually missed it.
Dude, Everton made it so simple for him, man. I still can't believe how bad Everton were. Because it's Arsenal and they're, you know, obviously new players, so you at least put some pressure on them, dude. I mean, just, it was awful. But yeah, Aubameyang combined well with Ozil, so yeah, maybe, you know, they have something going there, but they have this terrible away record, so let's see if Aubameyang can score some away goals.
I mean, I don't think that's because of, you know, the striker, that's more of the defense, but anyway, later on.
Oh,
that.
Yeah.
You know, one thing, I was waiting whole match to, you know, to see Aubameyang use his speed, but I didn't think he had a chance to do it. And I don't know if he would have a chance much to do it in the Premier League. I mean, more of the team sit back. So maybe not. But yeah, I think good finish.
Yeah,
also.
Definitely. You know, the thing with the Bundesliga is a lot of these teams press well. So out of maybe.
There's a highlight.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, there are 18 teams, so you'd probably find high lines against more than a third of them, so which you're not going to find that in the Premier League. So yeah, that he'll probably have to adapt his game a bit.
Yes, another new signing, which, I mean, he is not new anymore, but anyway, he was signed in January, Virgil van Dijk. I mean, Shiva, what do you think? Like, mixed reviews, right? I mean, personally, I think he has done well. I don't think the poor chap is to be blamed for all the goals that Liverpool has conceded, some very unluckily. But, I mean, what do you make out of him?
Yeah, I think the time hasn't arrived yet to make a verdict. But I think so far he has done quite well. His presence has been well observed. He is actually commanding the defense, setting the defense lines. And even you, if you watch us play, then you will see that he is actually attending aerial balls in both the boxes. So that's a positive point, because we didn't have any kind of defenders who actually can pose a threat in aerial balls. So actually that's a plus point. I think overall he has been good only, but there will be some pressure, there will be hype, because £75 million defender, so he has to keep up with that and deliver a consistent performance. And surprisingly, he has a better pairing with Lovren than Matip. So let's see how that's turned around.
Yeah, I think a lot of what's been said in the media, has blown things out of proportion, because if you give a journalist an option of two titles, the first being Liverpool defense fails again, and the second being 75 million flop, I mean, I'm pretty sure which one they're going to use. So, obviously a lot of the defensive frailties are a collective effort. It's not just up to Van Dijk. So, and I heard he was a bit overweight as well. So, yeah, he still, he's not yet in the zone where you'd expect a lot of consistency from him, but
I think Jamie Carragher first said like he is too big. Klopp also said something about that, right?
Yeah, Klopp actually said that he hasn't have much game time, so he actually need to reach the physical fitness for a 90 minutes game. And Jamie Carragher said that he needs to cut up some weights, and then Klopp actually mocked him, saying that Jamie might need to join gym and reduce some weights. So that's it. Klopp actually has admitted that he is not fully fit for the rest of the season, and we may actually see him in a full throttle from the upcoming season. So that's there.
Which has just happened today, I think, is Patrice Evra joining West Ham. Neeraj, old United player, what do you think out of it?
I think it's a bad signing. I'm just saying the truth, because he wasn't anywhere good for Marseille, and he used to rely on his pace mostly, and obviously with age he doesn't have that anymore, and also he has regressed very much in the past year, and also he hasn't played football for like. He hasn't trained or anything since he got terminated from Marseille. So I don't think this is a good signing for them. I think they signed him to be third choice, I guess. Third or second choice, but I don't know.
This is what David Sullivan said in December. Like, I'm quoting this. We'll have to bring in two or three in January. They won't be old journeymen. They'll be young players. They won't be 32. And Evra is 36.
37, I think.
I can't make out why West Ham require a left back. You know, they have Aaron Cresswell, they have Masuaku. And both are pretty good.
Cresswell had a good season last time out. But I've been going through a lot of these West Ham blogs. And right. A lot of the rants have been on Cresswell's poor form. So
I think after that injury, that big...
He sort of dropped off. So yep. I think early on, because he came from the championship, he was basically running on aggression and intensity. But yeah, apart from his crossing, I don't think he brings in a lot to West Ham. So yeah, maybe they need, but I'm not sure if Evra is the right.
It's not gonna improve with Evra. Yeah. It's not. It's just not. they have the two oldest fullbacks in the league now, I guess, with Zabaleta and.
Yeah,
that's like a world-class fullback pairing like 8 years ago.
Yeah, 2011, I guess. Yeah. So we'll go on to Alexis Sanchez. So, Neeraj, what are you making out of your club's highest earner? Apparent highest earner, anyway.
he had a good game, but Huddersfield were just looking to, I don't know what, break his legs or something. They're just rushing into challenges. And always leaving something on him, they're leaning in. And they also tried to rough up McTominay. But I think at the end of the day...
That was a bad thing. That was a bad tackle on the
But I read somewhere that Sanchez gave the ball away than any other United player on the night.
Yeah, he got disposes like 32 times.
So was he like trying a lot, like losing the ball, or like just
very I think he gave away like 20 passes. He had a 73% passing. He had a 73% passing success. So I think he completed 57 out of 77. Yeah, and the other times were when he was taking shots. Yeah, but he even though he got dispossessed, like it didn't seem upper in the way like it did for Arsenal. Like if you get what I'm saying, like. Like it didn't feel like he was trying those chip through balls like he was trying at Arsenal this season. Yeah, but I think he combined really well with Lingard, because like both of them were having these deft touches, one to twos, and running off each other. But you know, it's just Huddersfield, so you know, where, like in the big game, the players failed against Spurs. So let's just see like how it goes.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the verdict is still to be, you know, made regarding the new signings as such. I mean, at Chelsea also, Ross Barkley and Giroud have hardly played anything to, you know, measure their, like how they will be in the future. I will go on to Neville. Neville, so how is your big January window transfer doing?
Coutinho, he has just played only like 2 to 3 games, and to be the last game, the derby at Espanyol, I think he did very well. The conditions didn't favor us. It was raining heavily, and the pitch proved to be very bad for us. And the ball was not moving very fast, and it got abruptly slow, and the ball came to us still at many places. But in spite of that, Coutinho did very good. His
work rate was quite.
Stunning
shot, I think, came off the post or something.
Yeah, his one shot came off the bar, and it was a very good shot, and I just hope that the ball had went in, and it would have been a lovely goal. But see, the conditions didn't favor us that day, and that too, we were trailing a goal down in the second half, and to come back from that, we had to do a lot of work. And Coutinho's performance was all very good, and again with good players, he did much better as compared to the last game at Alaves. So that was pretty good, and I hope he performs like this in coming games.
Right. So continuing with Barcelona, one of the talking points regarding this game was that PK being booed badly, right?
Yes, it was
very uncommon with PK with his Catalonia rules, I think, and his outspoken attitude. But was this game anything special? I mean, did anything else happen?
No, actually, this saga is continuing. Like it's a result of many more that happened, many more such events that happened before. Actually, the build up of this happened in the Copa del Rey when Espanyol won the first leg. And there were PKs and Sergio Busquets statements were taken, and they were pretty much opposing, like Espanyol are starting to act like as they have won the tie, and Busquets statements were like the game consists of 180 minutes, like there were two legs, so we will see who will come better in the second leg and all, and basically the talk was around that. And eventually Barcelona won, but again we had to play them in the La Liga, in the derby, at their stadium. And I think PK made marks regarding the stadium and the area, that's the Cornella. So that was quite, I don't know what, but the fans at Espanyol found it very controversial. And when the game began in full swing, PK was being booed from the start. There were chants insulting his son's Milan, his wife Shakira, and it was building on and on and on. And finally, when PK scored that header, he just shushed it off, and the fans couldn't take it. And maybe the investigation now, Tebas is saying that an investigation will go on whether PK's celebration and comments were quiet, all right or not, and that whole thing will carry on. But then in the end, the game got very ugly, and literally Espanyol players were trying to break Barcelona. Like the Sergi Garcia and Umtiti got involved. They were getting involved physically. Garcia was trying to tackle Umtiti, and I think there were some rumors that racial remarks were made on Umtiti, and he got very pissed off. So that was not unacceptable at all. And for me, I feel these things happen on the pitch. So I guess banning or not, I don't know what the La Liga committee makes it a mix of it, but I think these things are pretty normal in the pitch. And even at the full-time whistle, PK went to the Espanyol players and tried to calm things down regarding all the celebrations and all. So I guess all that happens in the pitch should and must be forgotten and must be left at the pitch. So that's what I can hope for.
Right, so I mean, yeah, pretty disgraceful behavior by the fans of Espanyol, I think. But yeah, let's move on. So next week, I think we have the North London Derby. Spurs are at home against Arsenal. Big fixtures always, massive rivalry. And also, I think this time it's a lot to do for the table. I mean, Arsenal sits six on the table, 4 points off the fifth place Spurs. Neeraj, what do you think? What will happen? What's your prediction?
But Arsenal's gonna lose. I think Arsenal will lose, but because it's at Wembley, and Spurs have improved a lot at Wembley, and also Spurs players just have like too much energy for Arsenal. I feel because Arsenal's defense and midfield are. Have they even shown up for any game this season? Like,
yeah, I mean, Jaka.
Yes, I think yeah, but, yeah. I think it was the first Spurs game, which was the only game they showed up in a big game this season.
Yep. They'll won that game. Very unexpected.
So if Arsenal can pull off something like that again, like, good for them, I guess. But I can see Spurs just winning this 2-1 or something like that, like with one goal margin.
I think Arsenal have a pretty good chance because Spurs are playing tonight, I think, or tomorrow, I'm not sure. They have this
tonight.
Yeah, and next week they have their Champions League
Juventus.
So he'll have to rotate his squad, and I don't think even though Victor Wanyama scored that goal, he's still not match fit, and neither is Toby Alderweireld, who was on the bench. So the rotations might affect their style a bit, but overall, yeah, I think they're still the favourites, but I think we still can't rule Arsenal out, especially considering how well their new signings have started off.
Which is true. I think we can see a debut for Lucas Moura, right, in that this match.
I'm actually hoping it's a draw because both are behind Liverpool.
Shiva, what
about
you? Wait. I don't think Arsenal are that much of a problem for top four, if I'm being honest. Like, seriously, are Arsenal a problem? I don't think so.
It's basically we are in their place right now, so can't really say anything.
Shiva, what do you make of it? What's your prediction?
I think Arsenal should win this one because Spurs have some kind of fixture congestion also. And they will probably try and focus more for the Juve game. And we have seen plenty of times whenever there is a wave of Wenger out, Wenger does something great, like he has, and win few matches, and there is a again wave of Wenger in. So I think this game will be one of those games when Arsenal actually may totally outclass Spurs and win the game. So, pretty much, I think Arsenal will win only.
Naval, your prediction?
I think I'll go for a draw. Basically, it is more for Arsenal to gain a point, or maybe three. Spurs are playing very good at the moment, but then Arsenal really need to get good with their away forms. Their away forms have been disastrous, to say, and... another good thing that could be on the side is that probably that Arsenal are, I guess they are playing at the Wembley, right? So how would that work? And they also, have
actually
probably
have a pretty good record at the Wembley, I think. So
so did United. but yeah, you can never say like for sure. Like I was joking that Arsenal don't show up, but in the big games, you never know what happens. Like suddenly, you know, like how Spurs blitzed United in the first 10 seconds. United almost did something similar against Arsenal. And and Liverpool did that against Spurs. Like, even though the game ended in a draw, but still. Like, they attacked from the start and the job done early, got the goal in.
I think what Amit and Shiva mentioned, the fixture condition, I think that might be a problem for them. But I don't think the FA Cup replay will be much of a problem. I think they can play their, you know, second squad and still win this. I mean, they have decent depth. I mean, they have got, like, good depth in the fullback positions, in the midfield, and also in the attack. I mean, Llorente is a very able deputy. As for Arsenal, I don't know. I don't know if their defense can hold, you know, Harry Kane of all people. But again, with the Juventus game in mind, I don't know like how many minutes will Pochettino let him play. Overall, I think I will go for a draw. This suits Chelsea also, so yeah. It will be an exciting match. That's all from us in this episode. I will see you guys next episode. Say bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, guys.